guys, welcome back to This Is Life Unfiltered. I'm your host, Alexa Curtis, and I know the past few weeks have been a little bit on and a little bit off because of the first ever Be Fearless Summit that I successfully completed in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at Drexel University. And as much stress and time and energy went into it, I successfully pulled it off. And I'm still kind of recovering from that amount of time working from like 5 a.m. to 8, 9 p.m. every night. And obviously throughout the podcast, it's so important to me that I showcase my life and the reality behind being an entrepreneur, but also sometimes the downsides and what I do to balance. And sometimes truthfully, there is no balance. So through this podcast and through the guests that I have on, I want to give you guys a range of people to become inspired by, people who are entrepreneurs, people who are activists, and people who inspire me to both get out of my comfort zone, live life unfiltered, and also make the world a better place. So before I get into this week's guest, I want to encourage you guys to subscribe to This Is Life Unfiltered on the podcast app, which is on your cell phone. We're also available on Spotify. I've been getting a lot of messages about that. So that's Spotify, which is where you guys stream music. They also have a podcast side, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and every streaming platform. And on social media, This Is Life Unfiltered is available to listen and to follow at This Is Life Podcast. So every time a new episode comes out on Wednesday, you guys can follow the social media page and check out who is available to listen to and kind of get a sneak peek from there. So this week, I'm really excited because I've got a bit more of a unique guest on. I came across Kevin Briggs, I want to say earlier last year, perhaps even over a year ago. He's a speaker, an author, a consultant, and a veteran, and his story truly stood out to me. And over the past year, I've been desperately trying to get him on the podcast, and we finally found a time to have him on, which is today. And Kevin's story is quite unique. He's a little bit older than most of the guests that I've had on the podcast that are budding entrepreneurs right at the forefront of their career. But I actually watched Kevin's TED Talk quite a while ago, and his TED Talk truly stood out to me. It's called The Bridge Between Suicide and Life. And when I watched his TED Talk, I was really intrigued by his story and his messaging, because you guys know that I have a nonprofit called Media Impact and Navigation for Teens, where we go into schools and we talk about suicide and bullying and mental health. So I'm excited to have Kevin on today. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Well, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, take me back to the beginning, because you have done so much. You're an international crisis management, suicide prevention, and leadership skills presenter. But you have done things across the board and have also been featured in tons of different online press and public press, from Men's Health Magazine to NPR to People Magazine. So Kevin, take me back to the beginning, right when you realized that you wanted to make your mission helping people.
You know, I started right out of high school, went into the Army, and I thought, well, that's a way to help the country, and did that for a few years, got out because I had cancer, and I had to take some time off, and then started working with my father in San Francisco. He had a printing business, and then I got into corrections, state corrections. I still wanted to serve. I thought, well, let's try this. So I worked at San Quentin for a while, and a guy I was working with, he was going out for the California Highway Patrol, and he kept bugging me to go with him. Finally, I agreed to it. Okay, fine, I'll go with you. I never thought I would make it, but turned out I made it, graduated, and he did not, unfortunately. But I started with the Highway Patrol out here in California in 1990, and was a few years. I started in the East Bay over by Oakland. It was a few years before I was able to get back to my county, which is Marin. And then when I started working there, I began working on the Golden Gate Bridge. I really liked that area, and I had no idea of the number of suicides from that bridge, though. And I grew up in Marin, and Marin connects to San Francisco via that Golden Gate Bridge. So even though I was from the area, I had no idea. Sometimes we'd lose up to 60 people a year on that bridge. So it was a brutal reckoning for me, to say the least.
And where did you go to college? I assume you didn't go then, if you kind of went right into...
Right out of the military. And then I took some college courses while I was in the military, and then some more out, just community colleges. And I've taken a lot of courses outside of that for negotiations, like the FBI Crisis Negotiator School and all sorts of things like that.
And after a 23 career with the California Highway Patrol, that's when you decided to dedicate your life to promote mental health awareness, which is incredible. And that's Pivotal Points, which is the organization you founded to promote crisis management, suicide prevention, and leadership skills. So right off the bat there, I mean, that's such a variety of topics to cover, but was there something specific that happened in your life where you thought, this is where I want to make, or this is why I want to make this my mission?
You know, it was an accumulation of things, my own life events, from being diagnosed with depression, having heart surgeries, having been hit in the head a few times, and of course, riding on a motorcycle for the patrol, having crashes and concussions and things. But I think an accumulation of all these different factors said, you know what? And then getting the news events and going on to Yahoo News and having that occur, and that kind of started my career leaving the Highway Patrol into what I do now. And of course, I did a TED Talk, and that really launched things. So being asked to speak and come out, and I thought, well, how greater, or can I spread this message of what I'm trying to look for and what I want to talk about, then to get out of the Highway Patrol, retire early, and come out and talk to folks. So that's what I do now, roughly 30 times a year or so. I travel and talk to folks regarding their quality of life, mental health, mental illness. You know, how can we communicate better with one another?
You know, there's so many questions I have for you. One being, right now and for the past X amount of years, there's been such a stigma around mental health. There's so many young people out there who are struggling with so many mental health issues and are so ashamed to come out and accept them and to talk about them. So when you were younger, you know, obviously you have a few years on me, I'm 21. But when you were younger, social media wasn't as prominent. I feel like the rise of social media has perhaps assisted in a lot of these young people and their emotions. So when you were younger, did you have that same stigma around your depression?
When I was younger, we didn't have social media, to be honest with you. I'm 56, so we had nothing like what's nowadays. Mental illness was not talked about. Depression was not talked about. For the most part, even cancer wasn't spoken about. Back then, you would hear about it, but it, all you had was the news on TV, so to speak, and you could talk, you know, on a wired phone. So it is way different now. Nowadays, regarding social media.
Do you think it's better though? I mean, when you're still saying there was that same stigma, but now, I mean, perhaps the stigma is even more intense than it used to be. I mean, how has social media assisted in depression and suicide for these young people or the people that you've seen or talked to?
You know, I think it's gotten better, to be honest with you. Now, there still is what's going on out there is with depression and the social media, they can really intensify the effect about it. But also, there's a lot more help out there, too. There's apps for depression and, you know, a lot of different aspects that we can look at for help. Now, can people go on there and take a photo of something and spread news around a lot quicker? Of course, we see that all the time. And we saw that just with New Zealand, with what happened there, a tragedy. But there's also the good parts about social media and the ability to connect to one another instantly. So there's a lot of good with it also.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a huge fan of Headspace. I don't know if you're familiar with Headspace, which is kind of the meditation app. And there's apps like Calm and Headspace out there that really help young people. But I'm curious, take me back a bit to the beginning. You know, what was your family like in high school for you? Because your career kind of started a little bit later. I feel like that's perhaps when you found your calling, was when you really started as the Highway Patrol Sergeant. So what was your childhood like?
You know, we were upper middle income here in Marin County, very affluent. Had a great upbringing. It really did. Both parents, very kind. And my mother was a stay-home mom for the most part. As we got older, there was four of us. It's myself. I have a brother and two sisters. And, you know, it was a great childhood. We had family way up north in Northern California. We would go up there, up into the mountains every year for Thanksgiving and big family get-togethers. So it was really good. The only thing I didn't have in retrospect, I think, was I was not goal-oriented. And I didn't know what I wanted to do coming out of high school. I don't think I was ready for college. And that's why I went into the military and actually learned a lot there. But I have two boys now. One's 18, a senior, and the other is going to be 16 here pretty quick. So what I wanted to do was really emphasize to them, and I think I may even emphasize it too much, is being prepared for the future. Now, when I remember back then, you know, I was not ready for college at that time. But today, you'll have so many people knocking on the door for these really, really good jobs. So we need to be prepared of what can we bring to the table. Are you bringing a second language? You know, what are the skills that you're bringing? So that's what I try to install in my boys.
So how do you advise them to find those goals? Because I know a lot of people who are listening, and just in general, even a lot more older people now either leave a corporate job and kind of become their own boss, or are just as confused and want to quit their job and start something and they don't know. But how do you find those goals? How do you become more of a goal-oriented person?
You know, I think it's a matter of connecting with people. What are they doing? How can they help you? A support group is just critical. Many of us, especially those of us in law enforcement and corrections in the military, we think we can do a lot of this stuff on our own and we don't talk about our feelings and such. But I can tell you a support group is absolutely critical. And talking to folks, seeing a counselor, what do you like? There's jobs out there that many of us haven't even heard of that you may really, it's a matter of getting out there and seeing what's available. What do you like? Do you want to do something in the medical field? What's there? So I think trying different things. And like I explained to my boys, man, I'm not expecting you to go right into something out of high school into college. Maybe you'll want to be a psychologist. Well, try it. If it doesn't work out, switch over to something else. I'm really big on just doing something, you know, not taking a bunch of time off because time's passing you up.
I love that you say that because I say that all the time when people are like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, you know, you haven't found your purpose. Kevin, you really found your purpose. Like your purpose is so clear and so authentic to me, which is why I was so thrilled to have you on. But I think a lot of young people that are struggling with finding their dream career, their dream job, is they haven't gone out and experienced enough.
Right. And mind you, I was 27 when I went to the Highway Patrol. So I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And as far as coming out and speaking, you know, I didn't do that until I retired when I was 50. This is a whole different thing. I've been in government service all my life. I took a whole different direction when I was 50 years old. So as long as you're moving forward, doing something, you're not sitting at home, you know, you're handling what I call handling your business, whether that's self-improvement, whatever you may be. You know, maybe, hey, you like working with animals, whatever it is, try different things. And of course, it's not just all about the money all the time. Here in Marin County, as it is in many places, it's very, very expensive. So that's something that you need to look at. But as I tell my boys, you know, be happy. Find something that you enjoy doing. It may take a while. It may take years. But try different things.
And money also doesn't make you happy at all.
Right. Absolutely. I'll agree with you on that 1,000%.
Yeah.
We need to find something that we enjoy doing. And you want to be able to take a vacation now again. We need that stress relief.
Sure. I mean, it's really about the balance. And I mean, through all of your stuff and what you've done, it really seems like you were able to find that. But I'm so curious of how you kind of told people that your mission was helping to prevent suicide, because suicide is such a deep and dark topic. And obviously throughout what's going on in the news, it's so scary. And it's so scary for young people who are waking up to these shootings and whatnot. But there's one story that stood out to me, which is a podcast that you were actually on with a young male who you helped prevent from jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, that whole experience right there and the fact that you're so vocal about that is so inspiring. But how did you decide to specifically kind of make that your mission at the time, which is helping to prevent people from jumping off of this massive bridge in San Francisco?
Really, it's many years ago, going up and talking to an individual or individuals who were over that rail. There's just a 4-foot rail and then there's just a bar down there on the other side. And after that, it's nothing, 220 feet down. But looking into the eyes of people who were suffering, you could see they wanted to live, but they couldn't figure out a way. They were hopeless and helpless, couldn't get past that. They couldn't see another day. But I could just see it in their eyes that they wanted to live. So what could I say without, you know, I'm not going to lie to them or promise them anything. But many times just by being there for someone really, really helps. And that's what I emphasize with folks. You may not have the answers or know what to say, but by simply being there for someone, you can make all the difference in the world.
Do you think that you would consider yourself an entrepreneur? I mean, now with your speaking career and the different platforms you've been on, or would you still say that you're kind of somebody who was not that type A entrepreneur person from the get-go?
I wouldn't say type A entrepreneur. I want to spread a message. And when I came out and started this Pivotal Points, this business, so to speak, my first thought to myself was, all right, it needs to be about the cause and then the business after that. And that's what I want to keep clear in my own mind. And those who help me out, I go, this is what this is about. It's about the cause first and then the business, and everything will roll. So, and I enjoy coming out and talking about it. I have depression, and it was many, many, many years before I told anybody about this. And I thought, boy, I could lose friends. I might lose my job. All these negative things. When I finally came out and talked about it, I gained an audience, so to speak, of people who want to hear about it and listen and talk to me afterwards personally. And mind you, when I go and talk to folks, my therapy is afterwards, talking to people one-on-one. So I'm doing two talks this week. I'll be in Kentucky tomorrow and then in Seattle at the end of the week. And I tell folks, you know, afterwards, after the hour, hour and a half, whatever it is, you need to speak to folks one-on-one is really, really cool. And that's my therapy.
It's really interesting how openly you talk about suicide and depression as somebody who's dealt with that, because I've had both depression and anxiety my whole life. And it to a point, it is very difficult to talk about. But what are things that you do that you would advise other people to do? I have two questions in this one question. At the beginning of when they realize that they're dealing with something, whether that's depression or anxiety or suicide, and then at the end, perhaps once they get help or once they get on medication, to kind of overcome that stigma and realize that everyone is going through something. I mean, is there something that you've had to teach yourself to realize that it's okay that you have depression?
So I did that to myself. So you know what? All right, I'm going to come out and I'm going to talk about this and tell the family and these things. I thought it was a much bigger deal than actually what it turned out to be. But that support group is critical. And to focus on my own personal care. I know I'm going to have bad days. Just because I'm taking medication and doing therapy for depression doesn't mean everything's hunky-dory. I have bad days where I just don't want to even go out of the house. But the thing is, I know that those will pass. And that's really, really important. Because I know those are going to pass. Yes.
It's crucial that you say that. Yeah.
Those bad mental health days, you know, they will pass. And then we get up and we start doing our business again and working. So that's a big part of what's going on. And that, and to follow my heart, you know, try to get out there knowing that some days maybe I'm just going to work 2 hours. Okay. Now that's tough when you're working for somebody else. I know this. Yeah. I know this. But for me, there's days when I'll just work a couple of hours, but I also work at the local schools, at the 13 local schools in my area here in Marin County. So I do that a couple of days a week. And I think a big thing with folks is you need a purpose. You need a purpose to get out of bed and get on with life. I think that's really important. Now, whether that's walking a dog, whatever that may be, I think that's very, very important.
I tell that to all of my friends. I have a lot of friends who are so confused. They're out of high school or out of college and they don't know what they want to do. And it's so refreshing, Kevin, to hear somebody say the same thing, because I say it and I'm like, maybe I'm just going crazy. Maybe I'm the only one who says you guys have to find your purpose. You have to try more things. But as somebody who deals with mental health issues, you personally, and then you try to combat these mental health issues for other people, have you ever faced any kind of like negativity or people saying, you know, how can you try and help me with my depression if you have depression? Or has it been the opposite, like always a positive response?
Usually positive. I did receive one email from a gentleman and he kind of wrote it all out as, I'm not the hero I think I am. Well, for one, I never described myself as a hero anywhere. At a point in his life years ago, and an officer came up and talked to him for a long time and got him to come back over the rail. And it's been years and years and years, but he's still very bitter about that, that officer did not allow him to jump and end his life. But well, my first thought is when I'm reading this email is, well, buddy, you're still here. Most of the time, it's very positive. And I tell folks, it's not easy. Hell, it's not easy if you don't have depression, if you're just everything's fine with you. Life is tough. And you're going to have ups and downs and you can, you know, it can be very, very difficult, but We're given an opportunity here. We're given a chance. And go out and just grab life.
I agree.
Really, it's easy to say. You know, it really is. It's easy to say. But going out and just going for a walk. You have the chance to do this. You have the chance to go out and try different occupations. You may not find what you like for years. That's all right. As long as you're trying and you're willing to work hard, you know, things are going to turn out well.
You know, depression is such a difficult thing for any person to deal with, young or old. And I think sometimes people who don't necessarily have a mental health issue and try and compare themselves to somebody who does, you know, to kind of say, well, today is so stressful. It's, you know, it's different when you have stress, right? And then you have somebody who's dealing with depression. Those emotions and the way that you're wired are completely different. So what advice do you have out there for somebody whose friend or family member has depression and, you know, that the person on the other side really just doesn't see what that means or doesn't understand why that person can't get out of that bed? What advice do you have for them?
My mantra is listen to understand. Talk with them. Try to understand what they're going through. Don't compare situations. All ours are different. But really sit down and my best friend, I always tell him he's a big I guy. I did this. I did that. Most of the time is spent talking about him. And that's all right. He can do that. That's fine. But make it about the other person. Tell me what's going on. How do you feel? And do some research. If they have been suicidal, if they have been non-suicidal self-injury, being cutters, whatever they're going through, do some research on it. So you have a little bit of ammunition with you before you go in and talk with them. See what it's like to walk in their shoes. Empathy is huge, absolutely huge in this.
And knowledge is key. The more you can educate yourself about mental health, especially as we see what's currently happening in the news, I want to get your opinion on that because the more shootings and school kind of invasions and people who are committing suicide after they harm other people. You know, most of these people who are creating these issues and going into these schools and these mosques, most of them are men, most of them are white men. And just statistically, approximately 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. experience mental health illnesses in a year. And I think that especially the amount of males who deal with mental health issues is not as often discussed. In the world in general, we're expected to think that, and men are expected to think that, you know, they're the strong ones, they're the ones at the gym, they're going to be the ones who are going to save the family and, you know, create that safety net. But in reality, many males of all ages have a lot of mental health issues. So what is your perspective on how mental health is treated with males right now of all ages in the world? And, you know, why is it mostly always men who are doing such terrible, terrible and committing such terrible acts?
Well, for one, I think to me, and just my opinion, like you asked, I think it starts in the schools. We need to start talking about this more and more in the schools. Like they say, it's okay not to feel okay. Well, why is that? Why don't you feel okay? And to find out what is going on with folks and tell them it's okay to seek help. Mm-hmm. It's all right you're feeling that way. What can we do to help you and to get better educated? You know, I have seen folks tell me about their loved one, as young as 7 years old, losing their life. I mean, how is that? That's unthinkable.
Yeah.
But, you know, they look things up on the computer or they're hearing it from folks. So I believe we need to start in schools with education regarding mental health, mental illness, and progress from there. As far as white males, I think a lot of it is keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing. You are expected to provide for the family. Well, that's just way too much stress. And I'm not telling anybody or anything that's the right thing to do, to go out and shoot folks and whatever they're doing. But there is a lot of stress. And I would tell you it's a lot of stress for everybody these days. It's a tough time to live in. Anything we say can be turned around, so to speak. I had a buddy of mine got all upset because when he was texting me, I texted him a thumbs up. And he's all bent out of shape. That's completely rude. How could you do that? What are you talking about? What is that? So people are offended very easily these days.
Yeah, I mean, the world has changed so much, and that's partially due to social media.
But I think by bringing up the topic, and, you know, we lose roughly, over 40,000 folks in traffic accidents, fatalities in this country. Over 47,000 folks to suicide. So what are we hearing more about, though? We're hearing more about car accidents. We have a lot of work to do regarding stigma and mental health. It's getting better, but it's very slow to react.
Yeah.
So I think there's just so much pressure on folks, and we're missing things when people say certain things. Well, you don't have to worry about me. Everything's going to be fine in a week. Oh, great. Must have got a new job. Must be going on vacation. When we don't dig into them, so well, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I have a nonprofit where we go into schools and we talk about social media and mental health and these things. And every time I walk away from a talk, and sometimes the response from teachers and faculty is a little more negative than I'd expect. And I think it's because as much as we all say, let's talk about these things, let's talk about these things, for some reason, we are still not able to talk about them. So, you know, what can school systems do? Because you and I say the goal is to talk about these in schools, but a lot of times, even the schools agree that we should talk about them and no one does. I mean, how can we actually take what needs to be done and implement it in schools?
It has to start at the top. And I'm saying just the parents, the superintendents, the teachers. Kentucky has a very high suicide rate for those folks in school. And they invited me out, and I'll be speaking there this week to superintendents. So that's a great way to start. I will share what I have. There'll be other speakers to share. But they want to learn. They want to find out. We need to take egos out of the equation. The egos stop. They will blunt any progress we can make with mental health. So once we find out, you know what, that individual does talk about this and they can add something to this. Let's bring them in. Let's talk about it. And to have a working program. Okay. Because I know time is very, very valuable. And here we have math and then we have English. We have all these courses and they have to have so many hours into that. But we're leaving out the social factor and what we can do to help each other. I think there needs to be some time set aside for that.
When you say ego, what do you mean?
Folks who make it about themselves. When we talk, when we're having a conversation, well, listen to me. This is all the things I've accomplished. How come you can't be like me? This is what I did. How can you just sit there and do nothing? They don't realize what is going on inside that individual's head, what they've been through. Because they think because they've accomplished so much, listen to me and what I've done. Well, we're all completely different. And we have good times and bad times, but to keep bringing it up about what I've done, what I've accomplished is simply not right.
So do you mean specifically then kind of that assumption that they know what the mental health issue is or what that person's dealing with when truthfully they don't? Because if you don't have mental health issues, you're not going to know what somebody's dealing with.
Correct. No, exactly. Exactly right. And to go a little bit further into that, you know, when they make it about themselves or they don't want to know, we don't need this in my school or in my school district because we don't have an issue. Well, how do you know that? Boy, if we see the numbers and looking at that, we just lost a 17-year-old in my town last month to suicide. And it's, you know, when I went to a meeting regarding this that very day, there were the principal and the management and administration and then some counselors. And I kept hearing about pizza and water. We need to get pizza and water. That's what stuck in my head. I go, this is, what is going on there? I left. I walked out. I go, this is really something. We need to get way past that.
Yeah.
You know, make this about, and I call them kids because I'm 56. So any 18 and below, I call them kids, but it's about them. It's not about covering our bases. So once we can dump the ego and figure out, you know what, there's issues in it everywhere in this world. Then we can sit down and start talking, okay, we need to make some time for this and to really schedule things in where, yes, we do need the academics, but what about the person as a whole? What are we doing for them?
Somebody said to me a few days ago, they said, you know, there's all these courses in schools on biology and geography and math, but there's not one course on how to not fuck up your life. There's no course that schools teach that's simply how to even be a good person or be a good friend. I mean, are those the kind of things that you think schools should be educating young people about that they're not? Or are these courses that should be optional and taught outside of school?
You know, they should be taught. the same as math. You're growing up. You're learning as a human. And, mm-hmm. and you know, that should be part of it. It really should. How do we be a good person? What do we not say? Show me a course that talks about active listening skills, ALS. People can look that up. There's a lot of different segments. But show me a course that, when I go to colleges and high schools, I ask them, have you guys had a course in active listening skills? Maybe 1% of the people have. And they're critical in having a good conversation.
Can you dive a little bit deeper into active listening skills? Because when I think of that, I think I've never heard of that. I mean, I finished high school online, but I went to public school my whole life until I managed to make my career into this full-time website. But, you know, through those experiences, I still feel like I made so many mistakes when I left high school because of things I wasn't taught about. But specifically, what does active listening skills mean?
Well, start with the body language. When we're communicating, are our arms folded? Are we looking all around? Are we answering our phone during a conversation with someone? And where are we looking at? Are we looking eye to eye? Are we looking down because we're always looking at our phone and we haven't trained ourselves to look eye to eye? Different components are minimal encouragers. When somebody's talking to you, do you just sit there or do you think things like, wow, is that right? Really? These little comments that you can throw out to let that person know that you're listening. You know, silence is another one. Silence, just being quiet for a little bit. Nobody has to say anything. Mm-hmm. That can get people a little nervous sometimes. But going through this reframing and talking about, if this is what you're telling me, and summarizing, wow. Empathy is huge with that, and encourage folks to talk. You know, I want to let you know that I'm here for you, and I'm here to listen. And guiding them through a conversation. Can you tell me more about that? Encourage them to keep on going. So I would highly ask folks and emphasize to them to look up active listening skills, the different components, and to practice those. And it takes a while. It really does. But your conversation will be much, much better, and you'll learn more about one another.
I agree with everything you're saying. You know, I think that schools and colleges lack budget in the areas we need them to have budget in. I don't know if you agree with that, but, you know, sometimes colleges – and I can vouch for this because I've been on both ends of it, can hire speakers and give them so much money in high schools to come and speak and present, which is great. But then they lack when it comes to a course or even faculty training on certain things like social media. I mean, is that something you agree with?
Totally agree with that. Yes. Yes. Because most of the time we are listening. When you're in school, you're listening. But if we're not listening properly and don't know what to ask, then things are going to go by us. You know, we speak at about 150 words or so a minute, but we can hear around 450. So what's going on between that time differential is we're thinking about what we're doing tomorrow, where we're going on vacation, and we could be missing crucial things that people are saying.
You know, and I think it's difficult in a sense because right now with the rise of social media and the obsession that young people have with it, there's a lot of adults that, I mean, anyone over the age of, say, even 35 that, you know, even 30 that didn't grow up with social media. So as easy as it is for me to be like, you know, why don't schools teach us about this or why are schools not teaching young people about this? It's kind of like asking somebody to explain what, you know, a whale, how a whale is made if they've never like seen a whale, you know, something like that. So, I mean, how do schools overcome that? Because that's just as difficult. That's trying to teach people, you know, educate them on things that, to educate other people on the things they have no clue about.
Right. And there we start with the basics. You know, I'm always a big fan of that. Just go back to the basics. And how did it even start? How did this begin? How did Facebook start? Mm-hmm. All these different social media deals. So I think if we had a class in that, now is it going to take away from other stuff? Of course. Everything has its place. But if we don't start with this and show folks, now, you know, here's what this individual did and he posted this, you know, every single keystroke that you do, man, it's somewhere. When we know in the schools here in Marin County, when they're using one of the Chromebooks, if they type in suicide, that's a red flag. That gets picked up by the district, sent over to the principal, and the student is immediately pulled, and we talk about that.
What do you think is the first step? Like, what is the one thing that young adults should be taught right now that they aren't being taught?
The ability to show their emotions, to talk to their teacher, their instructor, to their coach, And even I'm going to go, I mean, even right alongside with parents, because we know most of the time when it comes to a lot of negative things, sometimes parents are the last ones to know. But for the students, for young folks to have the ability and the wherewithal to, you know what? I got some really bad stuff going on in my life right now, and I need to ask for help. And it's okay that I do. And there's folks that were there that will support me. And it's okay to fail. That's a huge one. Everybody thinks, you know, you got to have a 4.5 GPA to get into the colleges nowadays. How we ever got above perfect, I don't know. But as my boy's looking into colleges, it's okay to fail. You'll recover. It's okay.
I love that you say that. I love everything you say, but especially that, because failure is so much of a part of life, and the fact that everyone's expected to become successful and become this kind of overnight sensation is truly, I think, detrimental to everyone's mental health. But how have you watched your kids evolve with social media? I mean, you have kids that are kind of, you know, close to my age. So I'm just curious, as a parent yourself, how you educate them about social media for parents out there who are perhaps listening.
I show them stuff that people have typed and said, look, this person reacted in anger. Look what they typed. And then look what the response was. Or they got kicked off of that social media, you know, for a time period. But why are we getting so angry over something that somebody posted that, unless it was really bad about them themselves? Usually it's something in general. Mm-hmm. But also, what should we be saying about someone? Then why put it on there? Is it for your own ego? Oh, you know, Kevin Briggs is super cool. Look what he did. And no, if it's going to make fun of someone, man, don't do it. And remember, you know, when you're typing something, hey, it's saved somewhere. We're really big on that in the Highway Patrol, where everything that we typed, it's saved. And you know, you got to be cautious and cognizant and be fair to people. I think taking a look, how would you want to be treated? How that goes is a really good way to start with that.
Oh yeah. I mean, what's online now, young people don't realize how detrimental it can be, what they post online and how it's there for forever. So as a cop yourself, you know, as somebody who has worked in the legal enforcement and whatnot, for you to say that, I mean, I hope everyone listening truly realizes that, because it is on there. It is on there for forever. But Kevin, you work with an organization, NAMI, which is a huge mental health organization that I'm a huge fan of. So tell me about how you got involved with them as well.
NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, a fantastic organization. And there's a lot of good info on there for folks who want to understand more about mental illness and behavioral health and suicide. Check out their website. It's really, really good. A lot of stuff on there. But I do walks with them in the Bay Area here, and get-togethers, you know, anything I do to help out. It's interesting. And, you know, if you wanted to volunteer, I know a lot of folks who have lost loved ones to suicide. They'll go through that grieving time, and then they will want to help, and they'll volunteer at places like NAMI. And it helps so many people, and it gives them an out and a way to keep in contact with folks. It's a fantastic organization. And if you see a walk coming up for the benefit of that, I know I highly encourage you to take part in that.
Of course, I completely said their name wrong, and I hear it all the time. I always screw up their name. I think that's so great. And I mean, through your experiences with them, I mean, is there any one person you've met, or, you know, young person or adult who has kind of made you realize anything, or kind of given you that push you needed to have to get through whatever you were dealing with? I mean, you must meet so many different people.
I do. And actually, one of the individuals is with me here. I'm going to open the door and let my little chihuahua in real quick. So I'm going to tell you, just realize that we all need the stress relief. And when I'm doing my presentations, I talk about, here's my stress relief. And it's this little 5-pound chihuahua that I have. Her name was Bella, first small dog I ever had. But she's so much fun and cries like all hell when I get home off of my trips. It sounds like I'm beating her. I'm always expecting the cops to show up. But she has to be with me wherever I go and when I'm at home. So that's, she's in the room now. She looks like a Doberman. I wanted a Doberman, but I travel a lot, so I'm not home. So I have this little chihuahua, and you know, everybody comes over and takes care of her when I'm not around. So, But nah, man, I've met so many nice people. And to go out on those walks, introduce yourself, make some friends. And there's heartbreaking stories, but there's stories of resilience and how folks overcame tremendous tragedy and what they're doing now to help each other. So you would think if it's a suicide walk or a walk to prevent suicide, you know, there's going to be a lot of people there that are just down, so to speak. But it's really not. It's a celebration of life. And I would highly encourage anyone to try it.
I love that you say that.
Yeah, to try these walks and meet the people and find out what they're about. And you'll see all these different organizations are there to support them also.
And, you know, the fear of the unknown is such a real thing. It's very scary sometimes to get out of your comfort zone and to go and go to one of these walks or be a part of something like this that, you know, is going to get you out of your comfort zone and meet people. And it's kind of scary. So, I mean, what's your one piece of advice? What can somebody say to themselves to amp themselves up to go out and to make a change and, you know, use their voice, even if they think maybe their voice isn't going to necessarily impact a lot of people? What can they say to themselves? Because even one tweet, one blog post, one message, anything might change somebody's life.
And that's all we're looking for. Change one life. Fantastic. That's, you know, if I'm talking to folks, like I'll be talking to 7,000 pharmacists here at the end of the week. If just one of those pharmacists is able to help themselves, their family, or one of their customers, hey, I did my job. Fantastic. That's all we're looking for, is to help one person. If you can help more, phenomenal. You know, if you have a friend that can go with you to one of these walks and then try to meet people. Yes, you have to go out and be a little outgoing and say, hey, how are you? What's going on? Why are you here? And I think it's just really, really beneficial. You will come out and say, wow, that was really cool. I'm glad I did that.
I love that. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being on the podcast. What's your end goal? I mean, where do you want to see yourself in 5 years? I mean, you've done so much and helped so, so many in your life, but what is the end goal for you?
You know, I want to keep doing this as long as I can. I'm working with a couple of mental health professionals now on a kind of a workshop for a quality of life for yourself. And we're going to have a little booklet, rip out pages. So I think my goal is to help as many folks as I can. And in doing so, they're helping me to continue on. Because, of course, I struggle and deal with this depression on a daily basis also. So with me helping them and them helping me, I think we can become just better people and better understand one another. So my goal is to help as many folks as I can, and they're helping me.
I also think it's great that you, I mean, not great, but, you know, it even speaks more to you that you have mental health issues, that you're trying to help people with mental health issues. Because like I said, it's very difficult if you don't have mental health issues to then say, oh, you know, like I'm going to help people with depression, because you don't truly know what they're going with. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being so open and honest and helping people. And where can everyone buy your book, see your TED Talk, follow you on social media?
If they just Google my name, I think a lot of stuff comes up. And my website is Pivotal, so www.pivotal-points.com. And the book is called Guardian of the Golden Gate, Protecting the Line Between Hope and Despair. So, you know, we still have a lot of work to do, and I appreciate any assistance I can get, and I'm there for everyone else. I really appreciate you having me on the show. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for being such an inspiration to me, as well as the millions that you've impacted. You guys, if you weren't familiar with Kevin before, I hope you take time now, watch his TED Talk, and realize that the power you have to change the world is a very strong power. And you don't need to be, you know, the next celebrity or influencer, I hate that word, or whatever to do so. You can just as much make an impact in your community as you can just with yourself or with your friends or even with your family. So make sure to check out Kevin's work. Also check out organizations like NAMI, who truly assist in bringing attention to mental health awareness, because unfortunately, there really isn't a lot of people out there who are talking about mental health. There's still such a stigma around it. And you guys should know that anyone dealing with mental health deserves to be spoken to and accepted and loved and understood just as much as everyone else. So that's all I have for you guys this week on This Is Life Unfiltered. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much, Kevin, for being here. And I hope you guys have an incredible rest of your week. Talk to you soon. Bye, guys.